I'm Scott.
I'm Whitney.
And this is episode 86 of Frankly, My Dear. And this week is a very special
No, it's not a very special U2.
It's actually even less special than most U2's episodes.
Because there's only three instead of four.
Right. So this is a subpar episode.
It's still going to be good. I'm just saying it's not special.
We haven't done it yet. You have no way of knowing if it's going to be good.
It's special.
Might be the most special of all.
Do we have a sponsor or what?
We do. It is Shadow Dog Productions.
Surprise!
So we want to talk about Dirt Cheap Therapy. We reviewed it 2 weeks ago on the podcast. And
just about a therapist trying to earn $10,000, right? Wasn't it $10,000? Uh-huh. And she has a lot of patients that are a little bit wacky, but not... It doesn't really seem like that much more wacky than real psychiatrist patients would be.
It wasn't that wacky.
Yeah.
It was good. Our sponsor let us know that it's only going to be on sale for about another week. So if you want to pick up a copy, you've got a week because they're in talks to get distribution.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's not going to be available.
So it's going to be one of those movies that you can be like, oh yeah, I saw that like 6 months ago.
Exactly. Get in on it earlier. So what are we reviewing for you? ShadowDogProductions.com.
Right.
Go there.
Buy that. We've got...
HUD.
HUD, On Our Own, and then the third one.
We just watched it. What was it?
Do you remember? No.
No, I don't either. Stick around. Whitney, do you remember what that third movie was, though, for real?
It was L'Adolant. I just remembered.
And that was Kyle Lamont's pick?
Right.
Okay. But on to listener feedback. Who's our first writer-inner?
Daniel
from Test Patterns, and he's been on a few episodes of Frankly, My Dear. He and Kyle Lamont have a new TV, music, video game podcast, and it's awesome.
Last week I said we're not going to promote it anymore unless they pay us.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I guess
we want sponsorships.
All right, on to his email. First off, thank you for the totally unnecessary but totally appreciated plug for Test Patterns. You guys rock for doing that.
Oh, man, I feel guilty.
And if you need to leave that part off, the official listener feedback for the show, I completely understand. Whitney's sentiment that we don't need to plug them again makes perfect sense.
He didn't say it in that voice, did he?
He put it in quotes. I assume he was quoting you, and that's how you sound.
No, it's not.
That makes perfect sense. After all, the love you guys gave us in the episode.
No,
thanks again
just
for
kidding.
The guys. Thanks again from the guys at Test Patterns. When my sister and I were driving back from the Sasquatch Music Festival in Washington, I had some podcasts saved up, and I put on the latest Frankly, My Dear. Scott's review of Think Like a Man has inspired me and my white sister, my whiteness also approved, to go to a screening where people shout at the movie screen, mainly something with the word Tyler Perry in front of the title.
Oh, good choice.
Very good choice. So we are going to try to attend a weekend premiere of the next film in that auteur's legacy, Tyler Perry's Madea's Family, or Witness Protection. Love that. Tyler Perry's Madea's Witness Protection. We hope that someone in the audience shouts something half as great as "She owned drugs" at the screen. Quick question: how important is an audience to you for you to appreciate a movie? Sometimes it's vital, as it seems, for something like Think Like a Man or Rocky Horror. But I believe that there are definitely movies where the audience is useless, or if anything, gets in the way of my enjoyment.
I'd say most of the time.
And I prefer watching it alone on DVD. Any experience where an audience ruined it for you, but solo you enjoyed it, or vice versa?
That's hard to think of at once, but I don't go to movies at night, really, because of audiences.
Because of those teens.
Those teenagers.
One time, I went to go see Lord of the Rings, and an old lady with an oxygen tank was behind me, and for 3 hours...
Yeah, and also, I remember seeing Squid and the Whale and hating it, because the people behind me... Stop it. Stop it.
You can't make them stop.
But they were annoying behind me, but I haven't seen it since because I didn't like it when they did that. So, I mean, maybe I would like it now.
When I saw the Super Mario Brothers movie There were like two teenagers running around like idiots, and they kind of ruined everything.
Don't you think Twilight Breaking Dawn made it way better to see it with
way
an audience?
Way better.
Wait, was that the one that we saw with the pregnancy?
Part one.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the best.
All
That's
right.
like my underrated movie of the year.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
It was underrated by people like us, at least.
Yep.
It wasn't underrated by teenage girls.
Next up, Rebecca says, "Frankly, I think I have discovered a flaw with the instant watch choice on Netflix. For a small fee, I get to watch a number of films and shows instantly. However, I have discovered that because I am not trapped in a theater, nor have I waited for the disc, I have super low boredom threshold. Because of this, I find myself giving up on instant watch items almost immediately if they drag at all. If I have waited for the disc, and especially if I had paid the money to go see the film in theaters, I will stick through it, all the bumps. Do you suppose this is just me, or have you found yourself doing this?" Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't have patience because of instant watch.
But that's true. I hardly ever sent back discs that they actually sent me. I usually watch them all the way through.
Yep.
Or they'd sit on my desk for, like, 8 weeks because I wasn't watching them through.
Yeah, and that's too bad, because I'm sure there are movies on Instant Watch where I've watched the first 10 minutes and just not been in the mood for it, and now I'm like, oh, forever that's tainted. Like,
yeah,
oh, I tried,
for sure.
I didn't like it, I don't even remember why I didn't like it. On to the
I
next
feel like,
thing.
Though, the most of the movies that we do that with are like, we think they're going to be so bad they're going to be good.
Yes.
And then they aren't. They're just bad, and so we stop them.
That's a good point.
I don't feel like we've stopped many that, you know, I feel like when we're going to watch a boring movie, or we're like an artsy movie or a foreign film or whatever, something that we might get bored at, we've already like made up our minds we're going to watch this movie right now, so we hardly ever turn those off.
That's true.
It's when we're browsing through awful stuff.
I will say that there are a lot of movies that I wouldn't pay for theater, and I wouldn't have taken the risk to get the disc, have gotten bigger chances because of instant watch.
And that they've been awesome because of it. I just watched a movie called We're Not Married that I would have never seen. It has like a bit part by Marilyn Monroe, and I'm like, oh, I like her because I think she's really funny.
Right.
And it was good. It was really good. And it's just like 1953, black and white. Nobody I know directed it, but it has like Mitzi Gaynor and Zsa Gabor. Like,
awesome.
And it was cool, a cool movie, and I never would have gotten it otherwise.
Cool. And then Rebecca asks, "Have you seen Outcasts on Netflix? It's a BBC sci-fi show that only lasted one season, 8 episodes, but they are awesome." I haven't.
Me neither. There's so much TV to watch. We have to add that.
Rebecca bought us Firefly, the complete series,
yeah,
on DVD and
it
mailed
now.
It to us, and we are getting into it. I felt really bad that we took so long getting into it, but it's hard. It's a big commitment. And I knew I was going to like it. It was one of those shows that I've been, like, pushing, like, holding off, going, like, I know I'm going to love it. When it's the perfect time, I'm going to watch it.
Right.
Now it is. So last but not least is Jess Rogers from real-insight.com.
All right, she says, "Dear Franklies, I love that you tackled two movies without you both having seen them. Very efficient." Isn't that what they do, like, all the time, though? They have, like, a segment that's...
Well, they tackle, like, 90...
Yeah, but they have a segment that's, like, what did you watch this week? And they
right.
do, like, little mini-reviews, so...
Oh, right. Also, I haven't written in, but I really liked Real Insight's Charlize Theron episode.
Yeah?
Yeah. So that's just came out, so you guys should listen to that.
All right. "And now, despite myself, I want to see Think Like a Man. Damn you, Scott. I love the marital advice you guys often provide. I'll keep it in mind someday. Make my husband feel guilty for not watching my favorite movies. Thanks, Whit." Yeah, it helps. He's like forever indebted to me for movies.
Yeah.
Forever until you watch those movies, which will be forever.
This week, Jess Rogers was our You Choose winner. So Jess, you know the drill, let us know. But for those who don't know, anybody who writes in listener feedback to franklymydearpodcast@gmail.com gets entered in a weekly drawing, and we pick one name, and that person gets to tell us a movie to review. And we do it on a special You Choose episode, just like the one you're listening to right now. Next up is our review of La Dolente. Stick around. Kyle Lamon asked us to... Oh, that's Kyle Lamon of Test Patterns. It's a podcast.
What is Test Patterns about again?
They actually review video games, television programs, and music.
Oh, that was great. Okay, moving on.
Everything we don't. Mm-hmm. Asked us to review Jean Vigo's only feature-length film. I'm going to call it La Adelante.
Okay.
How do you want to say it?
I'm going to call it La Adelante.
La Adelante. It's French. It's from 1934. And according to somebody who got quoted on the front cover, it's too small to read who it is, maybe the greatest film ever made.
Do you think that's true?
No.
The greatest film ever made?
I don't think it.
People love it, though.
I loved it.
Wasn't it Jim Jarmusch that we were reading that said it was one of the, that it was like his favorite movie?
And all the 60s French New Wave directors loved it. Godard.
That's the coolest part of watching this movie, was seeing all the influences there. Like, there were scenes that seemed like direct, I don't know what you'd call it, homage. Or whatever, for 400 Blows. Like, the 400 Blows is definitely, like, taking a lot from it. I mean, there's a run to the ocean, and you know, the guy stands and looks into the ocean. All it needs is the freeze frame. And then there's, like, a puppet show, and it's watching somebody, like, react to the puppet show, and it sounds, it looks so much like 400 Blows. It was unbelievable. And then you can also see this in Jim Jarmusch's work, like, Stranger Than Paradise, or his, like, earlier stuff, Down by Law, when people are just kind of wandering around.
I was thinking Down by Law. Yeah. Yeah, and a lot takes place in a central location, like that ship.
Yeah, but it's not a lot that takes place, you know? It's, like, very little that takes place.
What do you mean? Like, very little screen time takes place on the boat? But very little happens.
Anything happens. Yes.
Oh, I'll agree. Yeah, definitely. So, basically, this is,
Sorry, I'm squishing around on my chair. My feet hurt.
So it's about a woman named Juliet who marries a man named Jean, who is a captain of a boat, and she comes to live with him on his ship. And so it's her husband, a cabin boy, and a strange old second mate.
That guy's awesome, the strange old second mate.
Yep.
He has this room full of, like, this was my favorite part of the movie. He has this...
Kittens!
Well, yeah, first of all, he loves cats, so there's kittens all over the boat.
Everywhere.
They're so cute, they're always throwing kittens around, but he's really gentle with them. Everybody else throws the kittens
around. He's really gentle with them, but at the same time, he's, like, climbing on a roof with one dangling from, like, the back of his neck. And yeah, the cat, like, it's fine. Yeah, no, it's cats fine. Were harmed.
It's his best friend. Sky goes where he goes. Anyway, he has, like, a little room below deck or whatever, and he's showing the girl his room, and it's full of all these, like, trinkets he's picked up along the way. See, that reminds me so much of Jarmusch. Is like, that's like a 10 minute scene of him just showing her things that he's got, and nothing really advances there.
No, a huge thing advances there. What? But not till the very, very end of the scene, when her husband comes in and freaks out that she's down in the bottom decks with this old man, which, like, nothing was going to happen.
Right.
And that's sort of the central to Jean's character, is he is protective, overly protective, and
of
jealous.
Someone he barely knows. Yes. So he doesn't know what to be protective of and what to let slide, it seems like, because he doesn't really know her.
But first of all, he should just be thankful that she's willing to marry him, and then get on a boat with two weirdos.
And not the nicest boat, either.
No, this isn't like, it's not a cruise liner. It's not a yacht.
Right.
It's just like a dingy boat. And so the main conflict comes is he's overprotective. She wants to break out and see the Paris nightlife. And eventually
and
she does.
Do it, so she just goes on her own.
She goes on her own and finds out how hard Paris is.
But he also finds out how hard it is without her on the boat. It's very special at the end.
Yeah. It's a fantastic film.
Yeah, I'm trying to pinpoint what makes it so fantastic, though. I really liked how it meandered all over the place. And I liked how it developed relationships super slowly. But that it didn't need any of this expository dialogue to give us any information about what's really going on. But it just, like, through a few sentences, you can get a sense of, like, how characters feel about each other. It's cool.
And I felt this, like, completely worked visually. Like, it didn't need dialogue.
What was so great about the visuals?
Just how the shots were set up and the editing. It told the story. You didn't need her saying, "I wish I was in Paris." And him saying, like, "I'm jealous of..." Like you were saying, no expository dialogue. Like, it didn't need dialogue to tell that story.
Yeah, and that's what's so great about any movie in the French New Wave, is they all don't really rely on dialogue. Truffaut has a kid alone for, like, half the movie, not saying anything, or Breathless. Like, none of the dialogue there speaking to each other really makes much sense.
Right.
But you can still get a feeling for how the characters feel about each other. It's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. I want to point out that Kyle LeMond is 3 for 3 showing us excellent
films.
What
are his other two?
He showed us Altered States.
Oh, that movie was awesome.
And he also showed us Perfect Blue, which was the animated film that inspired Black Swan.
That movie was creepy and awesome, too.
So he's 3 for 3 with movies that not only that I like, oh, those were good. I loved all three.
And I had never heard of the first two. I've heard of this one. I've been meaning to watch this one for a long time because it's on, you know, a bunch of lists, top 100 movies ever made.
Right.
List, you know, and I just haven't done it. I always got it mixed up with La Ventura, the Antonioni movie,
mm-hmm.
which is like 3.5 hours long and also takes place on a boat. And so it was like very, it was like confusing to me. But yeah, not that I want to compare them, but I'm really glad I've seen it now.
This was only 88 minutes, and I was reading an article about it that said that after it was made, I think it was the producers, maybe the distribution company, were worried that it wasn't going to play well, and they edited it down to, like, about an hour.
So weird. Like, okay, what year did this come out?
34.
34. So, it's just weird that they had expectations for what was going to play well already. Because you look at the stuff made in the early 30s, and it wasn't much more exciting than this. Even the, like, big, like, slapstick comedies going on in the U.S. are not much more exciting than this, so I don't understand the expectations that producers have. Because you read about this stuff all the time in early movies.
Right.
And how these amazing movies got cut down and lost to us forever.
Right.
And, I don't know, maybe we're just not seeing the movies that were very extremely popular.
We're seeing the best.
We're just seeing the best.
And I will say, you could cut this down to 60 minutes and still hit all of the plot points. You're going to miss the subtleties, you're going to miss what makes the film so special. But I could see where they're saying, like, oh, nothing happens for 10 minutes, just cut it.
But the plot is nothing special. That's, like, where you lose the entire movie completely.
We gotta get her off the boat faster. We gotta get her back on the boat faster. It's
right,
like, you don't.
You think they'd rather just be like, oh, we're not gonna release this movie.
Right,
like,
I could
cutting
see that.
It down is not gonna make it any more exciting than it is. Not an exciting movie. It's only 88 minutes, and it went by really slowly for me.
It went by slowly, but thoroughly enjoyable the whole time.
Yeah.
Which is not always the case with slow films. It was directed by a guy named Jean Vigo, and this was his only feature-length film.
Yeah,
he died when he was, I think, 34. He died in his 30s.
Yeah, FTB.
FTB, and never made another film.
Nope.
The disc that we got, and I had to send it back so we could get our next You Choose film. But it came with a collection of short films that I didn't get a chance to watch. But it'd be worth picking up this DVD to see those, because I really did enjoy this film, and I'd watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts about La Adolante?
I really liked the fashion in it.
1930s French fashion, I could
see
that.
Yeah, they all wore those, like, striped... They all wore exactly what you'd picture a French boatman wearing. Because, like, the guy has, like, high pants, and he goes to put on this little tank top, and I'm like, that is not his tank top, that is her tank top. And it's, like, this tight little short number, but it's, like, black and white striped. It's amazing.
And you're like, oh, it is his
tank
top.
Yeah, and everybody has black and white striped shirts, and they're adorable. And she's really, really cute.
Mm-hmm.
She might be underage. I don't know what I'm saying, but...
I think you could probably call an underage girl cute.
Yeah, okay.
It doesn't really work for me.
She's super cute.
Okay. All right, those are our thoughts. So, Kyle, thank you so much. You're 3 for 3. And next up, we'll be reviewing HUD. Stick around.
Well, I always say the law was meant to be interpreted in a lenient manner. And that's what I try to do. Sometimes I lean to one side of it, sometimes I lean to the other.
So Jess Rogers, who also won today's You Choose Pick, won a few months back, probably.
She's very loyal to us.
She is. We love her to death. Yeah. She picked a great movie. She picked HUD.
With Paul Newman looking like his very best.
1963. Okay, let's get into that right now.
Yeah.
HUD, we'll talk about what it is later. Whitney said, well, we're watching it. I said, how old was he in this movie? He looks pretty old, because she wouldn't stop talking about how great he looked. And then she's like, I don't know, he's like in his early 20s. I said, no. I say nay, nay.
I said 25, to be fair.
Yeah, and I said he looks like he's 40. He was 38.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know what age he was playing in this movie.
But he's a bit old to be breaking barbershop windows, right?
Right. So basically what this is, it's a, I guess it's a Western, but not in the normal sense. There's no shootouts or anything.
Yeah, but it's a Western in the same way, like, Giant is a Western.
Exactly. It
takes place in the West with cows and cowboys and shit.
It takes place in 1963, and Hud works for his father on a cow ranch.
But it takes place in 1963?
No. The movie's from 1963.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's a kind of a period piece, right?
Yeah, they never said when it took place.
I don't know, but it was after the Depression, but I think it was before the 60s. I don't know, just judging by how the town looked, but maybe that's how,
like, I think that's probably how it looks now.
Yeah, probably.
It's hard to tell.
He's got that Cadillac.
Yeah, he had a Cadillac, yeah, so okay. I bet it's not too old. And he's just this, like, angry, rebellious youth.
Yeah, see, I don't know if he was supposed to be a youth or not. Maybe he's just, like, a fuck-up. He really is playing, like, mid-30s.
Right.
And he's living with his elderly father.
Waiting for him to die.
Yeah, and so if that guy's his dad, he can't be that young.
That's a good point.
And then he's got his nephew there, the grandfather's grandson.
And his name is Lon.
Yeah,
and he's played by a 21-year-old.
Right, and then you've got a housekeeper, Alma, which when I first saw this movie, I thought Alma was the best name. Like, I want to name my kid Alma. I love that.
Alma Brown.
Yeah, she's Hud's age. And Hud is just like a jackass. He's like just this jerk of a kid who wants his dad to die so he can inherit the ranch, and not that he has any noble intentions with this ranch. He really wants to dig for oil.
Which, for some reason, Homer, who's his father and owns the ranch, Homer doesn't want to drill for oil.
Because he doesn't want to puncture holes in this land.
I don't
understand that either. He's just, like, kind of old-fashioned. But mostly, he's really attached to his animals. That's what I love about this movie, is he's got all these cows, and one of them, at the very beginning, turns up sick and dead. Dead, and they don't know what caused it. So they have to call government men in to figure out if it's foot and mouth disease, or hoof and mouth, or hoof and foot, whatever it's called.
Right.
Which, if it is, they're going to have to kill all the cows. It's, like, extremely contagious. It can go all over Texas. And the old man isn't necessarily concerned with the money of it, and he doesn't really... And that's why I think he doesn't want to drill oil, is because this ranch to him isn't about the money. It seems to be, like, more about his relationship with the land and with his animals.
Right. And so the movie, really the main conflict of the film, besides Hud's internal conflict, is will these cows have to be put down? And you don't find out until really the beginning of the third act,
mm-hmm.
whether that happens. And so you spend the rest of the film following Hud as he, like Whitney said, is way too old to be causing the type of trouble he's doing.
He gets drunk, he sleeps with another guy's wife, like, really openly, like, he's rude to everybody, he's just, like, a little jerk, and I think we were reading the trivia, I thought it was really interesting that he said afterwards people had, like, posters of him on their wall, and...
Teenagers did.
Yeah, teenagers, and they thought he was, like, the coolest, like, he was this big hero. But really, he's horrible. He's horrible throughout. He has, like, hardly any redeeming moments.
And Paul Newman has said that he played Hud as a villain.
And he clearly is. Like, he is mean and bad.
But there was something in his performance that got all of these teenagers, maybe from small towns, mm-hmm. maybe who don't want to work for their dad either. You know, he was just speaking to whoever teenagers were in 1963.
Right.
Something he's worked for him.
And I think it doesn't hurt that he's so handsome. And that he's made a career, and I don't know how many he'd been in at this point, but he's made a career out of playing an anti-hero. So it's kind of hard to not look at him as, like, the star figure and combine all his performances together.
Definitely.
You know, because he was just in, like, right before this, he was in The Hustler, where he's, like, he's not the greatest guy in that either, but he still looks so good, and he still acts so cool.
Yeah, definitely.
He is good looking.
He is.
And he stayed good looking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even his picture on the salad dressing bottle is okay. You know? Like, he was okay. He was okay in Hudsucker Proxy. He's, like, in his 80s in that
Right.
Feel. 70s, maybe. Anyway, what else?
The part where I would never put my poster on his on my wall, his poster on my wall ever, is towards the end of the film. He gets drunk and sexually assaults the housekeeper.
Man, you have such a problem with rape. I don't get it.
I just, it's not like I won't watch movies where rape happens.
No, it's just you can't like characters that try to rape anyone.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
And that's true, actually, because we were watching Naked, and you could never get over it. Even when we were like, well, maybe he didn't rape her, maybe like everybody in this is into rough sex or whatever. This right. was a You Choose episode from way back. And you could never get behind him. Like, he was never even slightly sympathetic to you.
No.
Same with Especially Spike from Buffy, which we also talked about on the show. Like, once, he's a vampire without a soul. One time he tries to rape, he tries to rape Buffy.
For like a whole episode.
But he realizes how horrible it was, and so he goes and gets a soul. He didn't have a soul.
I don't care. It didn't matter to me.
That's... You're not the one getting sexually assaulted. Why do you think that it's,
Who is?
Women, you know?
Oh.
That's what I mean. Like, it's interesting to me that you're super sensitive to it.
Yeah, I don't know.
When you're
just...
not necessarily the target.
Yeah, I just don't support it no matter what. Yeah, I don't have to be the target, I guess. I just can't be pro-rape.
Yeah, and I'm definitely not supportive of it.
You sound like you're supporting rapists.
Well, yeah, I guess I am supporting rapists in a certain way. It's like, I want them to be behind bars, and I don't want them out, and I want harsher sentences for rapists and stuff, but at the same time, I feel like I don't completely write off someone in a movie. I don't know, personally know a rapist, but I wouldn't write off someone in a movie because they made this horrible choice. They can still be sympathetic to
me. For me, I just have a problem with movies taking something a topic I see so seriously, so lightly.
Do you think that they did it? They took it lightly here?
Absolutely.
Really?
They're like chummy at the end. They're chilling, and
that's
and she's,
because I think Alma understands him a little bit more than anybody.
I think
else.
She does too. Like this was.
But Lon, that's when Lon completely. Loses it
and that's
that,
why
and
I'd put Lon's poster on my wall. Like, I loved Lon throughout the whole movie.
Lon was a little weenie, though.
I
can't follow you around, hun!
But then in the end, he, like, that's part of his becoming a man, is him going, not oh, I realize, like, Hud is a villain, and I don't need any part of that. And
that's
kind of
why I didn't like him. He seemed a little bit obvious for me. Like, that ending with him being like, I'm gonna go out on my own. I'm like, I get it. Like, at one point he loved Hud, now he doesn't.
Obvious, yes. 21, definitely.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
it's,
I think that's pretty
yeah,
true to life.
He's going to be back in 10 years.
And
like,
right.
I'm a duck. I am my half of the ranch.
Right. He's like, I drank it.
I drank it and raped all the women in this town.
And that's the thing. Like, Alma is chummy and, like, it didn't make me hate Alma at all. Like, Alma comes off as being a really strong character. Like, this isn't going to ruin her.
I loved that scene.
Me too.
Like, she, you know, it went too far, but she was like, she said something like, you know.
It would
have happened. It would have happened without all that unnecessary force.
Yeah, without the rough play or
whatever.
Without
the rough housing. Yeah, it was cool. Like,
because they've had this sexual tension the whole movie. And then he gets drunk and he attacks her. And for me, that's like an unforgivable act.
Mm-hmm.
And for her, it is as well. And she isn't calling the cops on him. And she isn't, like, getting out for revenge.
So it's
not, and
it's
no...
It's unforgivable, but it's not the end of her world.
It's just the end of their relationship.
Yeah, I really appreciate that in this movie. Because there have been so many movies where someone gets raped and that's it for them. Like, it's worse than murder. It's kind of following... up with that sort of, I don't know, this is a really touchy subject, but for me, thinking about it, and, you know, thinking about people I've known, it's like, it's something you have to move on from. It's like, what, 1 in 4 women or something are raped?
Yeah.
And so it's like, to say that it's worse than murder is completely discounting their lives now, it feels like to me.
Right, and you have and I understand that if you are a victim of an attack and it does ruin your life, like, I...
Right, I'm not saying
right,
that that's something
But
that,
then there is a societal pressure where you are raised to think that
it's going to define your life now.
Yeah, and then, and you can read interviews and articles on either side of the issue, but
right.
Hud was an interesting take on it.
I thought so. I thought Alma was, like... one of the best characters. I really like her.
And she's played by Patricia O'Neill.
Every time you say it, it sounds like Patrice O'Neill.
Patrice O'Neill.
I'm like, oh my gosh, what if Patrice O'Neill played Alma? He just like had a whole bunch of fat jokes and he was in drag.
Do you know her from other stuff?
No.
I don't either.
Let's see.
IMDb says she's in Breakfast at Tiffany's, The Day the Earth Stood Still.
I do know her from Face in the Crowd. I remember her in that.
I'm going to start watching more of her stuff because she really impressed me in this film. Really, yeah, everybody did. The guy who played Homer.
Doesn't it make you want to watch like every Paul Newman movie ever?
Yeah, it does.
I know. He's so magnetic on screen. Like, every once in a while, every few years, I go through a Paul Newman thing where I see another movie and I'm like, I have to watch 8 more Paul Newman movies now.
Right.
Because he's fascinating. Even in these, like, really boring movies he's in. Like, he's what is that good. Cool, what is that hot summer movie? Not Wet Hot American Summer, but he's in some summer movie and it's so boring, but he's so good.
I went back and looked up the email that Jess sent in, and I was hoping she would say why she picked it or why she loved it. Uh-huh. All she said was, this is my pick. How does my pick with Paul Newman?
Well, she should write in then. I'm sure she will.
Yeah, I'd love to hear why she picked it. Maybe it's just the fact that it's an amazing movie. I guess I just would want to talk with Jess about HUD, because I really loved it. I'd never seen it before. Chances are, I never would have seen it.
I think Jess should try and relate HUD to Spike with me.
Yeah.
Because I actually think that's a really interesting comparison. This episode doesn't have to be another Buffy episode.
We'll leave that till next time. All right, and last but not least, we're going to review one last film.
One last film on this very special episode.
Our last episode.
On our own.
Stick around.
Longer.
When I don't have you.
You don't have to. It's right up there.
When love goes away. Heaven knows it will burn and someone will pay. I'll be so sorry, my darling.
Jack's address.
On Our Own was a feature Films for Families movie, and for those
brought
who...
you from the same people who brought you the Buttercream Gang.
The Buttercream Gang, and so many others. If you grew up Mormon, chances are your family owns some feature Films for Families films.
Are they a Mormon company?
They're based out of Murray.
So yes. yeah, there aren't any companies based out of Murray that aren't Mormon
companies.
Their
early films had starred Mormon characters.
But then they sort of branched out to be like kind of wholesome characters.
Right.
Okay.
And so now they don't align themselves with a single religion. But
the Buttercream Gang kids weren't supposedly Mormon, right?
Well, they never say that they are, but come on.
Yeah, I mean, clearly
they are. Clearly they are. Like, I grew up with all of them.
You were the one. You were one of them.
Scotty.
You were Scotty. I was, wait.
I was probably the fat one.
What's the one who steals?
Paul?
What was it? Oh, no.
No, he's not Paul because he looks like Paul Rubens. He looks like Pee Wee Herman dressed as a cholo.
Yeah, cholo. Anyway, that was me. Okay, let's go back to On Our Own. This was Heather, my best friend's favorite movie when she was a kid.
Had you seen it before?
No.
And I'd never seen it before either. And Daniel, who isn't Mormon but grew up in Sacramento near lots of Mormons, came into contact with this underrated classic.
This would have been the best for a movie marathon. Like,
yeah.
It's one of those movies that is so terrible, but it's entertaining throughout. Like, there's always stuff happening.
Yeah, it's never like, oh, this is bad because, like, it's just, like, really terrible filmmaking and it's just boring. And, like the plot keeps moving.
Mm-hmm.
And the performances are all fine.
And what is the plot? Let's see. Orphans. Wait, their mother.
Recently
these kids
deceased.
Whose their mother just died have to go to an orphanage and they're like, sorry, we're going to split you all up. The cute ones go first, like the little ones.
Right.
And they're like, no. So they run away,
they
and they're going to go find their Uncle Jack in Arizona.
And busting out of the orphanage is sort of like breaking into Fort Knox.
Yeah, it was like getting out of prison.
Right.
It was. There was like barbed wire.
They're like crawling under fences.
Yeah, and it was just playing that music. The music in this movie was amazing.
It was the best. It was done by the Osmond boys.
Some of it, right?
Well, all of it.
Oh.
It was the Osmond boys.
Oh.
Which we didn't realize until the end credits rolled, when we realized that the theme song was not sang by girls. Which we really thought. And we'll play a clip from that for you at the end.
Let's play the whole thing. Come on.
Okay.
Don't get
we should play it at least 6 times, because that's how many times it's in this movie.
Yes.
Every scene ends.
Every time it's a happy welcome.
That's true.
Every time I wanted to hear it.
Because there's like a half hour towards the end when they're like meeting up with their uncle. They've traveled all the way to Phoenix.
Yeah, I kind of stopped paying attention
and then,
at that point.
Well, the song just stopped playing.
I know.
I don't know what stopped. They were, I guess
they were
technically,
still on their own.
But they weren't because
they
had
were with
found
that lady.
A woman. So let's back up.
Oh yeah, this whole movie, so they're orphans and blah, 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 but this whole movie is being told by a woman to her mother, like
but
her
you don't
old
know that.
Mother.
The movie starts with this bumbling old woman picking up her landline telephone and going, oh, really?
Landline, it's the only kind of line there was back then.
That was 1988. But it was also one of those big ones with the handle
right,
on it.
Right, old
like,
people ones.
And she's like knocking shit over with the cord, and it's ridiculous. And so she, the movie starts with her going, what happened? Tell me all the details and start at the beginning. And then the movie starts and you get all the details from the beginning. But every, like, couple scenes, it cuts back to the old woman talking to God knows who. Like, I can't believe that happened. And then explains
those
what you just watched.
Poor children.
Yeah, she explains what they just
watched.
Yeah,
it's
you
like there
watched.
Were commercial breaks and she was at the beginning of each commercial break recapping for those of you who are just tuning in. Like,
yeah.
So you're saying their parents died, their mom died, their dad is missing, and they're going to see their Uncle Jack? Yes. That's it, exactly.
Oh,
no!
Tell
me more!
Oh, no! I set the kitchen on fire!
Yeah, and then in the background there's, like, fire and...
She's, like, baking something,
poisoning,
but she keeps dropping
yeah,
shit, and she, like,
worst.
Yeah, then her oven's just smoking. And so, we're, like, we're watching, and I'm trying to catch up on my recap. And then all of a sudden I go, is her kitchen on fire?
So you're saying they stole the bus?
Yeah. They got a dog with them, too, named Ralph. Like, it's ridiculous.
I loved it.
But it was amazing at the same time. So they do. They steal this junky old Volkswagen Bug.
I think it was their mom's.
With $9. $9 in cash. And they hit the road.
A lot of heart.
And a lot of heart. There's 4 of them, ranging from, like, what? Like, 12 to...
No, that older kid was, like... 16, 15?
No.
Yeah, he was like 15.
All right, maybe 15. But he's young, and then they've got like a 13, 9, and 3.
Yeah.
And
he's driving the car.
And he's driving.
They gotta stay on back roads so the cops don't get him.
I will say that little kid drives a manual way better than I do.
Yeah.
Like, for me, we would be split up. Because I'd get in that driver's seat.
Maybe Uncle Jack gave him some driving lessons.
Maybe. And so they take off, and then that doesn't work out very well. He falls asleep at the wheel. They go rambling off onto the side.
Do we have to do this? They have a lot of adventures.
But then I'm just getting to the part where they meet the woman.
Oh, okay.
Which was, God, my next sentence.
Woman!
God,
straight to the moon!
Mm-hmm. But they meet a woman who offers them a ride, and they end up stealing her car, and then they end up stealing a bus, and they finally get to Uncle Jack's.
They're thieves.
They are.
With no, like, hardly any consequences. At the end, they explain that this kid is going to have to do community service.
Yeah.
And, like, work at the gas station for four Saturdays
yeah. in a row.
Yeah.
Because they steal gas from this guy, and then by the time they finally do get down to their Uncle Jack's house, Uncle Jack, I swear, shoots pornos in that house.
Yeah, that's great. Uncle Jack is rich.
He's a rich guy, and his house flies. Just looks like a porno house. And his wife or girlfriend...
What does a porno house look like, Scott?
Just, like, really rich with not a lot of furniture in it. Like, really high vaulted ceilings, but not a lot of detail.
Spacious.
Yeah, just, like, whatever is needed for that scene. Yeah, just, yeah. like... Like a couch with a towel on the floor.
Ew!
So they, And then he's either married or living with this woman who I assume is his lead actress.
Well, she hates children, obviously.
Except her own,
so she's obviously no good and needs to
And
go.
She obviously has no need for the plot, because she's only in one scene.
Well, no, she is supposed to be like the... She's supposed to be the way that the Uncle Jack character can still stay a good guy, but also refuse to take in the kids.
Right. For five whole
it's
minutes.
Not his fault.
Until he swoops in his goddamn airplane.
And is like, never mind.
I'll take the boys.
I divorced my wife and here I am.
So Uncle Jack has a nervous breakdown. Gets in his little Boeing and flies out over the desert. Somehow
lands on the freeway in front of a bus.
Yeah.
It's a high production movie, actually, for something from Murray.
That's true, because Buttercream Gang was shot for $13.
Yeah, it's in, like, houses and stuff. This
right.
had a bus.
This had a bus
They obviously
and...
made some money off Buttercream Gang. Actually, I wonder what was first. I don't know.
I would bet that this was first. Yeah.
Good. If I were a kid and I saw this, I would have loved this
movie. I don't
movie.
Know why. I saw a feature films for family movie about a robot that traded stocks. Or something like that. It was called Your Wildest Dreams. I'll look it up later. There was
sure
a
that wasn't Flight of the Navigator.
There was a robot, and the movie was about trading stocks. But this, for being for families, I wouldn't let my kid watch this.
Why?
Terrible messages.
Oh, yeah,
first,
like gambling.
They get their money from gambling.
Wait, but they gamble, but then they get beat up for it.
They do.
So obviously gambling.
Until the lady pulls
good,
a gun.
Oh, yeah.
The lady shows up and she's like, get away from those kids.
Solve your problems with firearms.
Right. Guns solve problems. Totally fine to gamble.
Divorce
steal.
Your wife at the, like the
yeah,
drop
of
a hat.
A dime.
Drop of a thing.
Yeah. And then,
drop of a pin.
And then, that's the whole movie.
Yeah. Fight your problems out. Sometimes you gotta fight your problems out.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right. It does have some terrible messages.
Not like the Buttercream Game.
Whatever. You would share your kid.
I wouldn't show my kid that.
Would you show your
bad
kid,
influences.
Like, Alien?
Show me the problem of Alien. Nobody's gambling in Alien.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Would you show your kid HUD?
I wouldn't show my kid HUD.
No, me neither.
Mm-mm. I would show him La Adelante.
Yeah.
If he was being punished.
But I could totally see why kids would like On Our Own. Like, what kid doesn't want to be
awesome.
An orphan?
For the same reason I love the Buttercream Gang. Like, it was just, it's pitched to really
it's,
geeky...
And it's kids, like, taking charge of their lives. That was Buttercream Gang,
It's like
Gang
Homeward
too.
Bound with kids.
Pete! His name's Pete!
Oh, yeah, it is Pete.
That cholo was
Come
Pete.
On, Pete!
Yeah!
Why are you stealing from the store, Pete?
How do you always do this, Pete?
Have we ever done a Buttercream Gang?
Maybe relax, forget all my problems.
Oh, yeah, in their treehouse.
And this one, On Our Own, has that many good lines, too.
There is actually something, so I had never seen On Our Own, but a few months ago, Daniel put this video on my wall that it's like the 10 best moments from On Our Own.
They have like as good of moments. If you've seen Buttercream Game, but not On Our Own, it has as good of moments as
it might.
Gang.
You know what? I will say On Our Own has better moments. Because Buttercream Gang,
mm-hmm.
Okay, fantastic scenes like circling around the girl on the bikes and causing her into, like, a mass hysteria.
And Pete stealing the candy bar.
And the shoelaces.
Right.
But I will counteract that by going the scene where they find a old cow skull in the desert, and the girl just breaks down and immediately like, we're gonna die here,
and they're like 25 feet from the road.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, cows can't make it, how can we make it?
Yeah, this movie has some great moments. It's just that, like, we haven't seen it a million times, so we can't quote it, but I want to.
Yeah.
I want you bad. This movie was awesome.
It's on Netflix. You can get the disc. Just buy it.
There was something else I wanted to say about it. Now I forgot. So there's that.
That's our review.
I was going to say, there are actually some tender moments in this.
Oh, yeah.
There was one at the very end when Uncle Jack is like, okay, you can stay with me. And the 15-year-old boy is like, I'll make it worth your while. I'll be good. I'll learn how to cook and clean. And I'll earn my keep. Like, it is so heartbreaking that is his immediate reaction. Like, he's just so grateful.
Uh-huh.
Oh my gosh, that's so sad. And a normal 15-year-old would be like, finally, someone sees in my way.
Yeah, that's true. I wouldn't have been that. Maybe I would have been.
But he's, like, so broken.
Mm-hmm.
No one wants him. Oh, by the way, their dad's an alcoholic. How did we not say that?
Oh, yeah, they find out.
He's in jail.
Yeah, he's in prison for, like, at least 3 more years.
Because he was an alcoholic,
uh-huh.
Seems like.
Yeah. The kids were...
It gets real. It goes there.
It does go there. It's like the Degrassi of Utah.
And the kids seem what?
Really well-balanced.
Yeah, for being so poor with an alcoholic father in L.A.
And a mom that, like... I don't know how they said she died.
At consumption.
She was sick.
I don't know.
She had been sick for a while. And they were like, we took care of our mom while she died. And and my dad's in prison, and Uncle Jack may not want us, and you took our dog from... Oh, yeah, they're like cattle.
Yeah.
They are. We didn't talk about the cow shooting scene in HUD.
No, because I thought that we wanted to keep it a mystery.
We didn't. We do.
What?
Or do we?
Or
Thanks for listening. Oh, why didn't I use my catchphrase?
I don't know.
Well, looks like my lucky day.
Even if your Uncle Jack knows where your dad is, that he might not want to...
I don't have any money or food or anything.
Oh, no. Oh, that's... Oh, darn it. Hold on, Peggy.
You guys, look at me and Ralph found...
They must have had a pretty bad example from their alcoholic father.
Yeah, I'll probably have to go to Russia or someplace like that.
Dear, I may be old, but I'm not senile.
Hey, look at this old bottle.
Don't do it! Stop!
We lied.
And they told the truth.
Yeah, green mud.
Those kids did what?
Dear, I may be old, but I'm not senile. I'm just finished.